said, the House and the Senate is identical, except the Senate has two technical provisions where it's repealing some references in session law. And so in this document, I was suggesting the Senate, all of Senate Article 2 as something for your consideration.
Chair members, this is identical to Senate File 1190, Section 3.
it strikes language governing pension commission expenses so that these would be paid in the same manner as for other legislative commissions, and then it strikes a requirement for reporting these expenses to the legislature. Refer to Ms. James.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, this is identical to Section 4 of Senate File 1190.
And why are we doing that, Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair, this, again, was from the LCC housekeeping bill, and I think the intent was that these expenses should just be paid according to the general statute that governs all legislative commissions.
Oh, I see. I understand. Any discussion?
Chair, Section 5 on the House side is from a different bill. This is the legislative auditor bill, and it under current law, it requires that audits cover appropriate economic use of public funds. This adds other public resources to this requirement. It also strikes the names of some entities that no longer exists or replaces other names. I should add that this was one where the House started out with a little bit different language on this, and there was some discussions between Mr. Nobles and the Commissioner of Management and Budget that led to a change the bill as it relates to auditing the financial statements of the state of Minnesota. And the House language reflects, I think, the current agreement between the auditor and the Commissioner of Management and Budget on this issue.
Auditor Nobles, would you like to come forth? And we have a handout from Auditor Nobles. And Ms. James, do you have language too?
Madam Chair and members, as Mr. Shepard described, ours is the same except for this one sentence that the Senate had. That, as I think Mr. Shepard described, has been updated, and we'll hear from Mr. Nobles about that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Jim Nobles, legislative auditor, and thank you for this opportunity to address this issue. Yes, Madam Chair and members, when I brought forth what I considered a housekeeping bill for the Office of the Legislative Auditor, I had three words which I have attempted to insert in all of the mandates for the legislative auditor to certain audits, and those three words are as resources permit. Because our resources do not stretch over all of the responsibilities that we have, and so we try to use them as strategically as possible, and so when we confront these mandates, it sometimes limits our ability to do that. And one of the biggest mandates that we have had in the law relates to the audit of the state's financial statements. That's what this document is. This audit consumes roughly 6 months of the work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor and our Financial Audit Division. And that leaves us very little time and resources to do all of the other audits that we need to be doing. And the ones that, frankly, I think are more meaningful to you, and those are our audits which we call control and compliance,
where we really get in and dig deep into the operations of state agencies and determine whether or not they're complying with the laws that you've passed and they've established adequate controls to protect their resources. But the state of Minnesota has to have this done. The people who really care about this document and the audit opinion on it are the credit rating agencies. And so I understand that. When I propose to insert language into our law that we would conduct this audit as resources permitted, the Commissioner of Management and Budget felt that that would send an unsettling signal to the credit rating agencies that the audit might not be done. That was not my intent. And so I agreed to take those words out, and they are no longer in the language that you see. But I will, frankly, continue to have a dialogue with you all the legislators, with the Legislative Audit Commission, certainly how we can accomplish this audit. And I will work on this within the Office of the Legislative Auditor in the most cost-effective way. I have never come to you before and asked for additional resources, and so again, my strategy is to try and use the resources that we have in the most strategic way. And so we will continue to work on trying to streamline and do this audit. I think we can do it effectively. We've been doing it for decades. I have a very trained and experienced staff to do it. And so again, in deference to the Commissioner of Management and Budget, who was concerned that this would send an unsettling signal to the credit rating agencies, I withdrew that those words. So that's where we are now, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Nelson?
So we're talking, Madam Chair, on line 27.3. It says, as after 16A.50 and comma, as resources permit, are we talking about taking that out of here? That it's in here? Or?
Mr. Shepherd, Nobles.
That language I thought was removed.
No, Madam Chair, the as resources permit is in the, on line 27.30 is in the current law, and it doesn't refer to the state's financial statements. It refers to the MNSCU, the University of Minnesota.
He's correct. Those words, the words as resources permit have been removed from the audit of the financial statements. The as resources permit is there in the language in the House bill for all the other work that we do.
As existing law. Okay.
That's
Thank
correct.
You, Madam Chair. Mr. Nobles.
So, Madam Chair, I think we mentioned this sometime before, somewhere down the line when we have our financial discussion. I think that we gave some thought that to the fact that if the legislative auditor removed that possibly there's an argument for some additional firepower in terms of them being able to accomplish audits if they had a few more people. So,
and Madam Chair, if I might just thank the Senate and particularly Senator Saxhoff for that recognition and that support. And I know you have to first get targets and work out all the other details of that. And I certainly understand that, but that extra support, if we receive it, will be very helpful, and thank you.
He's greasing the skids.
I'm trying.
Any other discussion?
I'll move Section 5, Madam Chair.
Section 5 has been moved. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I will just stay here in case there are questions about the next two sections, which also relate to the Office of the Legislative Auditor.
Okay. Please.
Madam Chair, Section 6 provides that as resources permit, the legislative auditor shall audit information and data systems for organizations that are subject to his authority. That's Section 6. Excuse me, Section 6 is the bottom of R2A3 and the top of R3A3 on the House side.
And Madam Chair, what I would say to this, because if you look at this in isolation, you might think this is a new responsibility. This really is something we have been doing for 15 years. Back a number of years ago, I saw the need for us to be able to have a very specialized group of auditors who can audit the security of data systems in state government. And so we created that function under our general responsibilities and authority. And some of you may know that the first team of auditors that we built was headed by Chris Boozy. And he did very effective work for us, so effective that the Department of Office of Management and Budget now, our Office of Technology, hired him away, and he took all of the team with him. And we've rebuilt that team. So this is work, again, that we have already been doing. It is simply an effort to put in our statute in a more visible way. So if you go to our statute, or citizens or other people look at our statute, they will know more explicitly that we do these kinds of data security audits. And as you well know, all of you, just by reading the newspaper, this has become a very serious concern in state government, that we protect data not only from external hacking, but from internal inappropriate use. And so we will be doing those audits as a regular part of our work.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, this section is the same as Section 2 of Senate File 870.
So I'll move Section 6, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Senator Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Noble, so you mentioned this was already a regular practice of your department, and it's the first time we're actually just putting into statute then?
That's correct, Senator and Madam Chair.
And I'm excited to see it there because I do have big concerns about what you hear in the news and cyber security, and it is a big threat, and I think we need to be maybe perhaps getting further recommendations from your office to see what needs to be ramped up there. So it's an area that I'm actually really interested in, so I'm glad to see it. So thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, Section 7 on the House side is the last in this series that relates to the legislative auditor, and this it requires the chief executive or financial or information officers to notify the legislative auditor when they discover information indicating that public money has been used for an unlawful purpose or when government data that's not public has been accessed or used unlawfully.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, this is identical to Senate File 870, Section 3.
Any further discussion?
I'll move Section 7.
Motion has been made. All in favor, or is there any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Conference Committee. I think I may be back on one other, but I think you have others to discuss before we get to that.
Thank you. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, I believe that on Section 8 of the House is identical to Section 1 of the Senate, right opposite from it. This has to do with the Secretary of State's authorities to enter into an agreements for enhancing the state's election system. I believe these are identical.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, yes, this is identical.
Senator Eaton?
I'll move them.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, Section 9, and on moving over to page R4, Section 9, and on the House side is nearly identical to Section 2 on the Senate side. The only difference I've noticed is that at the very end of the House language, the House split out the last sentence as a separate sentence rather than including it as a sort of a conditional phrase in the middle of the sentence there. So I think we had suggested using the House language there just for clarity, that there's no substantive difference.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's correct. There's no substantive difference.
I'll move Section 9.
Move the House language. Yeah.
House language, yes.
Any further discussion? All in favor of the Newton motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted.
And, Madam Chair, the next provision, Section 3 on the Senate side, this is one where the Senate had a chance to express things a little bit more clearly than I think the House did. They broke some things into a separate sentence that made the concepts more clear in my view. And I think these are substantively the same, but I thought the Senate language might be more clear here. And I defer to Ms. James if she sees any substantive differences.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, I see no substantive difference.
Senator Champion?
I'll move Section 3.
Senate language?
Senate language.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor of the Senate language, Section 3, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, the next, in trying to compile lists of things that seem to be not controversial, we skipped over the enterprise fund for the state auditor. That's a topic that will be discussed later tonight, I understand. So the next section that seemed to fit into the non-controversial category was on page R7A3 on the Senate side. This is the Senate Section 4. This was the first in the series of Department of Administration provisions that you heard Mr. Allen from the department present the other night. And this one, as he characterized, basically states that these bid data are private or public until the time and date specified in the solicitation that the bids are due.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, that's correct. The Department of Administration describes that this change is necessary to facilitate or to reflect that bids are not on paper anymore. So that they're not opened in the same way that they used to be.
Okay. I would move that language.
Senator Eaton moves adoption of the Senate language. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, the next provision is on R8A3 on the House side, Section 17. This section is from the LCC housekeeping bill, and it's striking reference to the Subcommittee on Government Accountability of the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, this section is identical to Section 8 of Senate File 1190.
Madam Chair, I'll move Section 17.
Representative Newton moves adoption of Section 17, House.
Which is
exactly the same as Section 8 and 1190 Senate. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, so we suggested skipping over for now the continuing appropriations language on the House side and skipping over the federal contingency planning on the House side on R10. And then I think the next sections that we were suggesting could be discussed for potential adoption are all the rest of the Department of Administration provisions on the Senate side, and I think Ms. James is going to take the lead in describing those.
All right, Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, on page R10, Section 5, this is the narrowing of the definition of a resident vendor for purposes of granting a preference for state contracts for goods and services. As Mr. Allen described the other night, this adds some conditions that a business has to meet in order to be considered a resident vendor to get the preferences that resident vendors get.
Mr. Shepherd.
And Madam Chair, I was going to note on all of these admin provisions, these are identical to the House provisions in House File 866, which was heard in Representative Nelson's committee, but not in State Government Finance. That's why they're not in this bill.
Senator Champion?
I move that section.
Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Ms. Allen?
Madam Chair, members, beginning at the bottom of page R10 and then going on to R11 is Section 6. And this provision, like the one we just saw in Section 3, is an accommodation for electronic
an electronic solicitation process, so it changes the time and date that information is made public in the solicitation process.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, this is identical to the provision in House File 866.
Representative Simon?
I'll move that language, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Simon moves adoption of the language on Section 6. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Ms. Allen?
Madam
Ms.
Chair.
James? It was Mr. Allen from the,
yes.
The other night.
Madam Chair, members, on page R11, section 7, is an exemption for service contracts that are under $5,000 from a requirement that the commissioner first make certain determinations about whether, and one of those determinations that is sort of the well-known one is that the administration has to make a determination that there's no state employee that's able and available to perform the services before the administration enters into a service contract. So this allows them to enter into those service contracts for small amounts, for amounts under $5,000, without having to make those determinations.
I'll move Section 7, Madam Chair.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is on page R12, Section 8, and this exempts the administration from a formal solicitation process for goods and services up to $5,000. Under current law, they don't have to go through the full solicitation process and seek bids for goods and services up to $2,500. Yeah. But this allows them, it sets the limit at $5,000.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, this is identical to the comparable provision in House File 866.
I move Section 8.
Senator Franson moves. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Ms. Allen? Ms. James? Ms.
James.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, the next section on page R12, Section 9, is an OET provision that exempts agencies from a requirement to include non-visual technology access standards in state contracts for procurement of information technology. And I don't believe that this committee's heard anything about the OET provisions yet.
Mr. Shepherd?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think Ms. James is right that this, I had characterized this as being in the Department of Admin bill because it is actually codified in their chapter, but I think it was in the OET bill. It was one of the things that was folded into House File 866 when we were moving some sections in and out of that bill. But you may, because as Ms. James indicates, you haven't heard from OET on some of these yet. If you wanted to hold that and wait to hear from them together on other things, you could do that.
Okay. Mr. Eichton's standing up, though.
Yep.
Mr. Eichton? You might help us.
Thank you, madam.
Finish a whole article if you talk now.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This proposal does add language to the Department of Administration statutes for standards for the procurement of information technology by agencies that ensures its usability by those who are blind or visually impaired. So Minute Services, we issued similar standards in 2010 that include stronger, more enforceable language. As a result, currently the two different standards are required to be included in RFPs, related contracts. This is duplicative, it's confusing for those who are responding to RFPs. So this language clarifies that executive branch agencies who are subject to minutes technology standards, need not include the admin standards in RFPs and contracts. I'm happy to speak to the differences in those standards, but I would just add that this change is supported by the National Federation for the Blind of Minnesota, the Commission for the Deaf, Deaf-Blind, and Hard-of-Hearing Minnesotans, State Services for the Blind, and the Department of Administration. So I'm happy to answer any questions, get into the specifics of why the minute standards are, we feel, stronger, more enforceable, as opposed to the admin standards, but I'll stand for any questions.
Mr. Eichten, what is the agency's did they agree to this language, and what agencies have to follow this the most?
Madam Chair, all state agencies have to follow the admin standards. In addition, MNSCU has to follow the admin standards, so that's why we tailored the language to say only that state agencies subject to minute technology standards need not include the admin standards, so that MNSCU would still be required to include those admin standards, even though they're not held to our technology standards.
And who monitors to see that these standards are in place and used at all times?
As our Mr. Nobles mentioned, Chris Boozy has moved to the Office of Enterprise Technology. He heads up our standards and compliance unit. In addition, we have Jay Wyant, who is our Chief Information Accessibility Officer. I just say he's been doing great work for the last couple of years to ensure that agencies are able to comply with these standards. It's not an easy task. It takes some work, but he's done a great job of that. So.
Is there any further discussion or questions?
So, Madam Chair, this would be Section 9.
Yes. And Mr. Shepherd's nodding his head. Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll move that section.
Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, on page R13, section 10, this eliminates a requirement that certain notices be published in the State Register. The notices that this applies to are the request for qualifications or request for proposals for design-build contracts. It allows advertising in a manner designated by the commissioner instead of requiring that they be published in the State Register.
Okay. Mr. Shepherd?
And Madam Chair, House File 866 had an identical provision.
I'll move Section 10.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Section 10.
Madam Chair and members, on page R14, Section 11 is a similar sort of provision for construction manager at risk contracts, allowing the advertisement of these requests for qualifications or proposals to be published in a manner designated by the commissioner instead of requiring that they be published in the State Register.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, again, House File 866 had an identical provision.
Madam Chair, I'll move Section 11.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Senator Saxon.
I didn't see that it was on here, but the next section in the Senate, corresponding to Section 21 in the House, appears to be pretty close. What?
Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, they are similar. They are slightly different. And I believe that the Senate language is the language that has been most recently requested by OET. But perhaps Mr. Eichten can weigh in on that. And we perhaps have an amendment about this.
Mr. Eichten, this was the one, this was the discussed the other night by Mr. Allen, and he was going to check on with management.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Are you referring to Kent Allen?
Yes.
Wasn't
Ms. Roberts? Did you get an answer, Ms. Roberts?
Madam Chair and members, this, as Ms. James noted, the language is similar, but we think that there has been more work that has been done with OET and the state agencies. I think that you may want to ask if, you know, which agencies have been involved in that discussion.
Oh, that's the one. Okay. Yeah. Mr.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Acton.
There have been some recent conversations with the Department of Natural Resources, the PCA, and Minute as well, just as well as the Department of Revenue, just to ensure this language is tight and clear and that all agencies are comfortable with it. I did send a proposed amendment along to Council earlier today that has the support of all the agencies involved. It simply clarifies that for an agency receiving appropriations for a project, the agency must work with OET to determine the IT cost portion of that project and then transfer that amount to OET to carry out the work, and that this transfer must be documented in the service level agreements that we've crafted with all state agencies.
I think we'll hold on that and get a little more written information.
Yep. Proof. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Acton. Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, that brings us to page R15, section 13. And this provision allows the Office of Enterprise Technology to charge a service fee for users of its North Star system. The amount of the fee is capped at $2. The exact amount of the fee is to be set with advice from an e-government advisory council that's established in the next section of the Senate side. This provision has a prohibition on charging the fee for merely viewing or inspecting data, and it puts this money into a North Star account, a designated account, and appropriates that money to the Office of Enterprise Technology.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, this was one that I think in some of the House discussions you had suggested perhaps should be discussed more and not
with the finances. Not,
yes, I believe that was what you were thinking, Madam Chair.
We'd like to hold that, Mr. Representative Satcon.
Very good. Thank you.
But you might, Ms. James, you might tell us what the $2 was going to be used for.
This would be a transaction fee that they could charge when entities requested information. It's my understanding that they would be applying this fee when businesses wanted information in a certain report format or specialized reports of that nature, not merely for viewing or inspecting data.
Thank you. Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, the next section on page R17, section 15 on the Senate side is identical to section 22 on the House side, I believe. And this moves the auditing duties from the state auditor to the legislative auditor for the Dairy Council.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, I agree this is identical.
Madam Chair, I'll move section 15.
Section
of the Senate, of the Senate version.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, on the list of things that seem to be non-controversial, we skipped over House Section 23. Did not include that on the list of non-controversial items. So on the bottom of R17A3, House Section 24 begins several sections that were brought to us by the public radio folks. And Section 24 in the law governing grants to public non-commercial radio stations specifies which federal regulations govern operations of these stations, and then it you can see it defines local as an area designated by the FCC's contour map.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, similar provisions were in Senate File 1524, but they were not identical. We did a lot of work on this language as we were putting together the Senate's bill, but I don't think we ended up with language that we were confident was satisfactory to all of the agencies, so we didn't include it, but we were working toward including something like this.
Is there any anyone here that wants to give advice? Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, members, Tom Hansen with Winthrop and Weinstein representing Ambers. I think the House language represents a later iteration of working with the Department of Admin and the other you know, with public radio and, you know, public TV. We had worked with Ms. Jane, and then at some point we introduced the bill, but then we progressed farther before the language that you see in the House is the final conclusion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Slavsak.
Ms. James, are you comfortable with what's accomplished in the House language?
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, and members, I would suggest that you hear from each of the agencies affected to make sure they're all satisfied with this language.
And those agencies are?
It would be the Department of Administration. Mr. Yoakum, behind that pillar over there.
Mr. Yoakum.
Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee, Kurt Yoakum with the Minnesota Department of Administration. Last summer, Ampers had, or I should say last fall, run this legislation, or the proposals passed the office grants management. And I'm not going to say that. I think everyone particularly pertains to us, but we were comfortable with the language and had no objections, and we were fine with what Ampers had proposed on this. So the department is okay.
Are any other broadcasting?
Yes, to add, that'd be great. Okay.
Madam Chair, Stephen Schreiber from Minnesota Public Radio, and we are supportive of this work. We think it'll give more clarity for Ampers and the Department of Administration.
Mr. Straczynski? Public TV.
Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, representing Friends of Minnesota Public Television. We concur with the language.
Is that everybody, Ms. James?
Madam Chair, members, yes.
You've heard from them all.
Madam Chair, would this be an appropriate time to look at this amendment that Mr. Shepherd has prepared for MPTV? Which we go into section 26. And I don't know if staff has seen this from Mr. Straczynski.
But we're on section 24 now. Aren't we in? Is section 26 amending 24?
Okay. So we're only doing 24.
Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Am I correct, Ms. James, that we're only doing 24?
Madam Chair, members,
we're doing all three.
I'm not sure which you would like to discuss. We had sort of lumped them all together when we heard from the witnesses. from the testifiers.
Madam Chair, Ms. James, all three of these sections are on public broadcasting, correct?
Madam Chair, members, yes. 24, 5, 6, and 7.
Not 7.
Oh, not 7,
no,
sorry.
No.
Just 24 through 26. Yes.
Okay. But shouldn't we do 24, 25, 26 together first and then do the amendment that you...
Madam Chair, is the amendment to 26? Is that what...
It's to 26.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, members, the amendment would propose a new section that would fit into section 26. So it's additional. So you could do the three sections that have already been discussed together, and then you could consider the amendment separately as a new section if you wanted to do that.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll move sections 24, 25, and 26 then.
Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
You know, maybe we should have Mr. Jasinski come up and explain it.
Have you seen it? He's talked to you about
this. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
Do everybody have a copy?
No, we don't have a copy.
Yeah. We should hold that.
Yeah, let's do this.
We'll do it when we're prepared.
Yeah, and everybody's sitting. Okay.
But we all know it's coming. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, the next item is on page R20, A3, House Section 27. This is from the LCC housekeeping bill, and it strikes the authority of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission to subpoena witnesses and records.
Clarify. What? Tell me again where we are.
Madam Chair, it's on page R20, A3, Section 27 on the House side, lines 40.9 to 40.14.
I'll move that section, Madam Chair. James.
Madam Chair, Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, it's almost identical to the Senate provision in Senate File 1190, but the title is corrected to remove investigative powers, as it should be.
Senator Champion.
I'll move that section. Section 27.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, the next section, section 16 on the Senate side, at the bottom of R20, and 28 on the House side are very similar. You'll notice on the House side on R21, the Senate says all public officials and parties to the agreement shall comply with the requirements of 3.978, and the House side has a bit more language. It says all public officials and parties shall provide the legislative auditor with all documents and data the auditor deems necessary and also comply with this. So the House had that additional language, which I don't recall exactly where we got that from. Probably from Mr. Nobles.
Any discussion? Ms. James?
Madam Chair, no. We didn't hear anything about this language, the extra phrase.
Any preference? Mr. Noble?
Madam Chair, members, again, for the record, Jim Nobles, legislative auditor. No, they accomplish the same thing. One is just a little more explicit. This is already authority in law, has been in law for a long time, that people that are subject to audit by the legislative auditor have to provide us with all documents that we require. So I could live with either the House or Senate version.
Madam Chair, should we go with the one that's more explicit?
Yes.
All right. Which one is it?
It's the house.
I'm sorry.
Section 28.
Oh, okay. Section 28.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I guess maybe this is a question to the lawyer in the room, but is putting more explicit language in, could that... I think I heard in some other committee talking about it, because it's too explicit, it could cause problems down the road up in the other direction. I guess I'm looking for to Representative Simon if that would be problematic or just a thought that I have. Like I said, I think I heard something at another committee on something else.
I think seven heads turned when you said the lawyer in the room.
Like one.
More than one lawyer.
That's right. I was thinking of the lawyer in our
table's full of them. I retract your first.
Take it back.
Me a couple. I'm looking at our side of the table.
Representative Simon, do you want to give advice?
Representative Nelson and members, I don't see any problem in this context being marked.
Sue!
I move. Madam Chair, I move 28.
House language.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, the next provision on the House side is part of the State Auditor Enterprise Fund, so you should set that aside as part of that discussion. This is just a change in cross-reference. And Ms. James can perhaps explain the other provision on the Senate side.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, on page R21, section 17 is a mechanism for changing the name of the Office of Enterprise Technology to the Office of Minute Services through a revisor's instruction to make the name change throughout the statutes.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, the House had passed an identical provision in House File 1389, which was passed after this side-by-side was prepared.
I'll move the language. Set up language.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Ms. James.
Madam Chair, the next sections are on the House side.
And section,
Mr. Shepherd, I'm sorry.
Section 30, Madam Chair, is part of the LCC housekeeping bill, and it just clarifies that the chair of the Legislative Advisory Commission would be a member of the Senate in 2013.
Okay. And Madam Chair and members, that's identical to section 10 in Senate File 1190.
Madam Chair, I'll move Section 30.
Okay. Senator Champion moves adoption of Section 30. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, the next provision on the very bottom last line of R21 and continuing on to R22 on the House side is part of the topic that Mr. Nobles described earlier. He had suggested when he requested modification of language on the audit of the state financial statements that he make recommendations to the Audit Commission and appropriate legislative committees by October of this year.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, the Senate did not hear any such provision.
Any discussion? Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair and members, again, this was just an agreement that I reached with the Commissioner of Management and Budget that we would continue a consideration of possible alternatives for accomplishing an audit of the state's annual financial statements. I could live without this language. I would do the evaluation anyway. I think it's just giving some explicit direction to the legislative auditor. If I think that language does no harm. And again, it's just directive. It wouldn't be codified, just so everybody knows that we're going to make an examination of alternatives and make recommendations. And one of those recommendations, I might add, may be, particularly given the help we're receiving from the Senate, I will say again, that we continue to do the audit. So, I could, I would like to have the language, but I could live without it.
Any further discussion?
I'll move the section.
Senator Champion moves adoption. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, on R22, Section 32 on the House side was not on our list of things that we regarded as non-controversial. We suggested holding that one for now. And that on the repealers, there's two of the three repealers there are on our list of non-controversial things. The repealer of 6.58 should be held for later because it relates to the audit, the auditor's enterprise fund. So that'll, whatever you decide there, that'll follow along. But the other two repealers, Section 3, were part of the LCC housekeeping bill. Section 3.304, Subdivision 1, creates an Office of Legislative Research. Subdivision 5 and 1 provide for the LCC expenses to be split between the House and the Senate. And there is no such office, and that's not the way the expenses are split. And so the LCC proposed repealing that. Section 3.885, Subdivision 10, creates a subcommittee on government accountability under the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy, and that subcommittee is not operative, so the LCC housekeeping bill proposed repealing that as well.
We'll hold that. But we make progress. Look at the good progress.
We're doing good.
Okay.
Article 5.
So that's Article 3. So now we're...
Article 5?
Going to Article 5, Mr. Shepherd?
Yes, Madam Chair. The next it's Article 5 on the Senate side, the military and veterans provisions. And the first sections are on R1, A5, dealing with authorized leave are, I believe, identical.
That's what I have.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'll move Senate Section 1.
Okay. Motion for adoption, Section 1. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted.
And Madam Chair, the next section on the Senate side, Section 2, Ms. James had described earlier that the Senate had put a definition of commissioner in here, and that seemed to make sense. So we included that on our list of things that we thought were not controversial.
I'll move Section 2.
Motion to adopt Section 2. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, I had included some of these other sections on the CBSO grants and the GI Bill, but I think in conversations earlier today you had suggested maybe holding off on some of these until you had made all of the financial decisions because some of these relate to those decisions, and so that would apply to sections 3 through 8, I believe.
Yes.
Or the 7.
Yeah.
Some of these are 3 through 7, I should say, on the House side, and the parallel ones on the Senate side. So some of these are the same. The CBSO grant amounts are different because the bills had different funding amounts to support these. But I had a note that you had suggested perhaps holding off on,
yes,
on all of these.
I think we should. And on Section 9, too.
And so turning to page R6, A5, I think, Madam Chair, you had suggested holding off on Senate Section 9 now until you discussed the financials.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other provisions are all on the House side. Section 8 is the one that it's on R6A5, beginning on line 24.12. This is the provision that Mr. Cleary had described earlier, talking about how competent evidence of rehabilitation can be established by showing a copy of the DD-214 demonstrating honorable discharge from the armed forces.
Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, this provision was contained in Senate files but did not move. They weren't heard in the Senate.
Madam Chair, the only thing I would question on this is whether we have all crimes. And we discussed this in committee on line 24-22. It says for any crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we had actually had it for a felony or a gross misdemeanor. We don't, you know, want these people limited because they had a traffic ticket.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members and Representative Newton, I think the discussion, we had extensive discussion in the House committee on this, but I think that discussion is reflected on page R7A5, House line 25.10, where the issue is, once you have shown rehabilitation, what subsequent crime would then disqualify you? And that's where the committee decided that it should be a gross misdemeanor or a felony that would disqualify you from using your DD-214. At one point in the House bill, that language on 25.10 read any crime, and it was changed later to gross misdemeanor or felony.
Yes, that's right.
You're right, Mr. Shepherd. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, we're talking about just Section 8.
Section 8, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And the Senate heard a bill that was similar or the same?
No.
Okay.
There exists a Senate bill, Senate file 218, but it's sitting in Judiciary. It was not heard. There was no action taken on it.
Okay. And I notice, because we're going to deal here with House Sections 8 through 11, that we had a Senate file 319 that did pass?
Yes, Section 10 is from Senate file 319 that did pass out of Judiciary.
Senator Franz, was that your bill?
It was, Mr. Chair, and it was actually passed out of the floor of the Senate, so it moved further.
Okay.
So that's, Madam Chair,
just for clarity,
so that's Section 10?
Yes, that's okay. Section 10. And I just would probably want to make sure that it's the same language because we did have some amendments that we had done through the process, and I would just want to make sure that the same language.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, that's the House file, Senate 10. Section 10, not the Senate.
Section 10.
Yes.
Would be.
But you want to check.
I'd like to, Madam
we'll
Chair.
We'll hold those, the Section 8, 9, 10.
And Madam Chair, if I remember right, there are discussions on Section 8, that was Representative Detmer's bill, and it was about people that might have had misgivings before they went into service as they served their time and came back out with a honorable discharge with the DD-214. You could show they'd rehabilitated, so that stuff didn't hold them back from getting jobs in the future.
Yeah.
Right.
Madam Chair, I note that Section 11, House Section 11, though, seems to be identical to the repealer of Section 10 on the Senate. So,
you want to move that?
I'd move that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. So we got Section 11. More than half. Let's we go to Article 6. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, Article 6 is the article that deals with the Revenue Department provisions, and I believe that all of these provisions are identical, except on the very last page, R12, the House has a provision, Section 13, that requires the Commissioner of Revenue to report on data practices issues relating to issuance of debit cards for tax refunds. Otherwise, I believe the whole article is identical.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's correct. It's all identical except for, as Mr. Shepherd mentioned, that Section 13, which we heard testimony on the other night.
Madam Chair, without having a lot, but we did have some pretty good testimonies. Everybody on the Senate side okay with that?
We just had a concern about whether we were going to require the report or not.
And Mr. Mossman came to me today, and we talked, and so we'll still put, I think we should still put Section 13 on hold, because he's going to provide some additional information in a day or two that might make us reconsider the report. Or if we didn't have the report, we'll see what happens with what Mr. Mossman presents to us in a couple days.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt sections 1 through 12 and 14.
Any further discussion? Department of Revenue have any statement to make about our wisdom on adopting 1 through 14 with the exclusion of 13?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair and members, I don't have a comment on the other sections. I appreciate your support on them. And as you indicated, we think that a number of the data practices issues could be identified now, and so we're pulling those together, and the committee can determine whether or not that is satisfies your interest in lieu of a report.
Very good. Ms. James.
Madam Chair, members, if I could just clarify the motion. If you're interested in taking all of the provisions that are identical on the Senate side, you would want 1 through 14 completely. It's just the Senate's or the House side starts with Section 20, so its numbering is different, and that's why there's the Section 13 that you are putting on hold. But if you take the Senate side, it's 1 through 14.
Right. And that was your motion,
that's
right, Senator?
That's my motion.
And you understand that, Mr. Shepherd?
Yes.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, that concluded our list of things that we thought were seemed similar or not controversial. There's items that you went over the other night that are riders in Article 1 that you'll have to revisit after you make your financial decisions. And then you, of course, need to discuss the Compensation Council some later time.
I like that first phrase. That concludes. That feels good.
It does. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. James and Mr. Shepherd. We appreciate it. We've made progress. We're going forward.
We are.
We're cooperating. Feeling good. Yeah.
I'm sure even though it's 10 to 10.
On Friday night.
On Friday night. As I said, we don't have a light. State Auditor. Welcome to the committee. Good evening, Madam Chair. We need information about the Enterprise Zone Fund, because we have it, they don't. Yes. Senator Saxon, did you not have information? Or?
Madam Chair, the state auditor was before us at least a couple of times, and we're ready to listen.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be brief to begin, and if you would like more information, I'd be happy to provide it. So on the Enterprise Fund for the State Auditor's Office, briefly, what it'll do, it'll make it provide more clarity for lawmakers in terms of tracking our revenues and expenditures for our audit function within the office together rather than separately in the state accounting system. So it's a change to the state accounting system. The Enterprise Fund is going to allow our office to be more responsive to our workload and allow us to complete our audits in a timely and cost-effective manner. Our workload can go up and down depending on request audits we receive from local governments and petition audits that we receive from taxpayers of different communities, as well as changing standards with GASB and other folks, and or Congress if they want to change deadlines for when certain audits have to be completed. Much like the legislative auditor finishing the state's CAFR, there are deadlines. There's a benefit in the Enterprise Fund in that it can assist the counties and cities that we audit in terms of stabilizing their audit rates. Statute requires that we charge just our cost for the audit when we conduct audits, much like a private CPA firm, but anyway, the state requires us to recover those costs. So the state gives us an appropriation, and we charge their fees, and then we put the money back in the general fund. So right now, it's tracked separately this way. It would be more of an enterprise fund function, which is appropriate when you're in a business enterprise. I'm going to stop there and see if you have questions. I have more information, but the hour is late.
And it's my understanding, Auditor Otto, that there used to be an enterprise fund. And then the enterprise fund went away, and now you're saying it should come back.
Madam Chair, yes, there was an enterprise fund in the office for years. And so it's not unusual for the office to have it. It was gone after being there for 7 years now. I believe it's really appropriate to have it in the office. I think there are advantages, especially for our local governments. As well as clarity for lawmakers.
And are you proposing with the enterprise fund to be able to avoid situations like may the other one go away?
Oh. Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm tired. I think I tuned out for one moment. There would not be any issues with the Enterprise Fund with our office. We are audited by the legislative auditor. So you have that backstop of an audit being done every 2 years of our office, and so an Enterprise Fund would be audited. I think in the past it was a perception. It's not happening under me. If you talk to any of my staff, they know how extraordinarily frugal I am. I think they would say it in a positive manner. We only can charge for what our costs are, so there couldn't be any excess.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
Madam Auditor, so if this is approved and implemented, you going to be able to take care of it? Are you going to require some revenue transition? How would that work?
I wasn't sure, Matt, from my office, but basically MMB is assured. We've already spoken with MMB quite a ways back to make sure that they could handle it, and they said they could. So they don't believe it'd be an issue. They already have the authority to do these kinds of things with some other enterprise funds within state government, so they didn't perceive that there'd be an issue for us. What we'll do is very carefully track our billing process. We already do fairly regular billing just for the convenience of local governments, but that will be... Again, the people in the accounting office, in our accounting office, will handle that.
Are there any other questions on the Enterprise Fund? Please proceed.
Madam Chair, and then would you like me to talk about the small amendment, or no?
If you wish.
Sure, I would like to do that. Well, may I add one more item with the Enterprise Fund? We'll continue to come to the legislature, and it ties into the amendment, to report on the different divisions within our office. The only division that will have the Enterprise Fund is the Audit Division. I know that the legislature has a deep interest in making sure that they don't lose track of or sight of the Audit Division and their Enterprise Fund activity. And so some language had been added in the House bill around trying to make sure you're getting information from the office around audit rates and things like that. So what I tried to do was I drafted a small amendment. I'm not sure if the members have it at the table, Madam Chair.
I have it.
Oh.
I don't know what's here.
It's small. It looks, it should look like this.
No, Senate didn't get them.
Madam Chair, if it would be useful, I can briefly go over it and help out folks understand what it is. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So to provide, I guess, comfort and assurance that we would continue to report to you on the Enterprise Fund.
Thank you.
We drafted language that I think will get you the information that would be most helpful to you.
Thank you.
In understanding what's going on with our Enterprise Fund. By January 15th of each odd number year, the State Auditor must report to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees in the House and Senate with jurisdiction over the budget of the State Auditor, a summary of State Auditor Enterprise Fund revenues and expenditures for the biennium ending June 30 of that year. So for both. And then the report will also include for biennium the number of full-time equivalents paid by the fund, any audit rate changes stated as a percentage, the number of audit reports issued, and the number of counties audited. I believed that this would be much more concrete information for you all to see if the number of audits are going up and down, if the number of staff is going up or down, and then the revenues and expenditures flowing in and out of the Enterprise Fund. So I wanted to provide that because I believe it will provide clearer information. It's something that we can actually do.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just as you were reading that, and I was reading this, why being so specific about the audit rate changes being stated as a percentage? It just seems odd why it's we're specifying that.
Auditor Otto.
Madam Chair. That's how we express it to our clients. So our audit clients, what we'll do is we send a letter out at the beginning of each calendar year, and we'll say the audit rates are not changing, or the audit rates are increasing by 1%, or the audit rates are decreasing by 1%. So that's how we state it to them. So you'll be able to track, because we're trying to stabilize audit rates, you'll be able to see, did they remain flat? Did they increase? Did they decrease? So it seems to work well for the audit clients, and that's why I put it out there that that might be helpful for you all as well when working to stabilize.
Do you put a cap on how high the percentage can go?
Madam Chair, if the legislature changed the language in terms of how we charge for audits, that's possible. Some states, I think, actually supplement or subsidize audits of local governments. The state of Minnesota doesn't do that. But we are required to charge our costs. Now, we're always trying to be efficient, but the increase in the state contract. Well, if we're paying people more, that may have an impact on audit rates. So there's things that are, can be out of our control. But so that's a piece that could change the audit rates, is the a change in the state contract.
Are there any other questions?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Senator Francis.
Thank you, Auditor Otto. I wish we can put this in a lot of agency reports back to legislature and full-time equivalents. I think it's very responsible to have this language, so I appreciate it coming forward. I'd be supportive of it.
Any other questions? Anything else that you want to... This is your big chance.
Madam Chair and members, this would be a really... It's really important to the office. It allows us to deal with downturns as well. In downturns, if the office gets reduced, we actually lose our economies of scale, which can increase audit costs for the local governments. Sometimes it's a little bit counterintuitive, but we really believe that this will provide a small nugget to our counties and our larger cities and any other local governments that request that we provide an audit for them of their financial statements. So I would be... I ask for your serious consideration of the Enterprise Fund for the Office of the State Auditor. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming. So is that possible? That concludes our agenda.
That concludes it. We, in deference to some extent to the death of a mother and sitting senator, not a lot is going to go out in the Senate tomorrow, and I kind of thought that probably we wouldn't meet tomorrow. So that will mean that technically you have the gavel on Monday, but I'm hoping, and I've been hearing through the grapevine that we maybe can hit sometime early in the week. We'll be thinking about our getting our targets, and that would be a next great step.
I've been thinking about getting them for a couple of days now.
It would be terrific. I think that we've done a pretty good job of doing it about as much as we can, getting our information in terms of what we have in there. I would hope that that on Monday, with or without targets, that we'd be able to do a little discussion on things that we've kind of set aside because they seemed a little more contentious. Probably about that time.
And what time do you go into session on Monday?
Noon.
So we'll be meeting about the same time. But I don't know what we're having on our schedule, but I know what you're having.
Yes. Well, Madam Chair, what will happen is the caucus will meet, the caucuses will meet prior to, instead of going in and calling it to order and then going out. So we'll start the meeting at noon, and I'm sure we'll only have one thing on the agenda. That being the case, if it's anything like your procedure was, I guess we'd be looking at 3 to 4 hours, so it might not be that late.
Okay.
So you and I will communicate as to how we're going to deal with this.
Right. And if anyone has suggestions of things that we haven't talked about that are not tied to the budget that we should talk about, forward that to Senator Saxhager, myself, and we can work up a cooperative agenda for Monday.
Okay. That'd be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.